A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is Questions of the Force. Listeners have questions. We will try to have answers. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Cat Napsock. Sometimes I have answers. Sometimes I have incomplete thoughts disguised as answers, but happy to be here.
And I always have questions. Always more questions, right?
Yes.
Just about life in general. As always, we want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/4center. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Ken made a great pick for this week for our recommendation. We are continuing to recommend the novelization of Revenge of the Sith by Matthew Stover. Really get you in those Obi-Wan Kenobi, Anakin Skywalker feelings. A great book, a weird book. Ken, when was the last time you read this one?
Probably 2005, 6 and I want to. I have recently, not about a year ago, read the Phantom Menace novel. Again, we talked about here on the show about that. But somewhere my Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith is in a box I've yet to find in storage. I know I have them. So I might just have to use the Audible link and get myself an audiobook version of Revenge of the Sith.
Yet another great plug for Audible. Is your physical book locked away in storage that you can't find? That's what's happening to both Ken and I, so why not give it a listen on Audible? You can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/4center. One more time, that's audibletrial.com/4center for a free audiobook. And with that, we're going to get into our questions. We have two from Twitter, two from our patrons on Patreon. We go first to Twitter, and Eric Stegliano? Yeah, there we go. I had a little bit of vowel confusion. Stegliano, Eric Stegliano. Here's what Eric has to say. Do you think Palpatine's face getting wrinkled and damaged in Revenge of the Sith was caused by the lightning getting reflected back at him, or was that his, quote, true face? Oh, I love this question. I love this discussion. I can't remember what the novelization says. So we will have our own opinions. Ken, where do you go with this one?
First of all, Eric, man, yeah, this is one of those questions I've been asking myself since long before podcasting even existed, I think, or before it was well known. I mean, this is like a 2005 question. And so my answer is this. I often wonder if this was part of his plan, meaning this was Sheev on Naboo. That's my face. He looks in the mirror and goes, this is my face. This isn't going to do for the evil empire I need to build. Along the way, maybe I, get deformed. And I can use that to my advantage. So my plan is to, number one, turn Anakin. Two, shock myself to make it all look cool. And he goes from there. But I'll say beyond that, I think, and I might get to my actual answer here, Eric, here, but I showing my work here, my math problem. I think it's in line a lot of what I personally look at Palpatine's career, where not everything he does was part of his meticulous plan. And he does have meticulous plans, but man, does he roll with those punches. And we kind of talk about a lot of those moments here in Star Wars, and Padme's often one of the ones making him roll with the punches. And this is another, to me, example where, all right, that happened. I knew I needed to do mace, but man, this is great. Look at the bonus. I look horrible and I can use that to my advantage. I'm going to roll with that. But then it makes me think of, you know, later on, especially Battlefront 2 comes to mind, some of the other Rebels, where he kind of hides the face to the public and kind of leans on that side of it for the propaganda of it all. So I don't know at the end of the day. So end of the day, final question, final answer, Joseph, is I don't think it was his physical true face. I think it was something it definitely represents his heart, and he just kind of rolled with it. That's my take. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think it is a matter of both. I'm so with you. This is probably one of my earliest seeds of wanting to do a podcast. I didn't think about it that way. I didn't know that people would enjoy a Star Wars podcast. I was thrilled to be wrong. But I would say for me, it was watching the DVD. And I remember the night I got the DVD. I was on deadline writing something for a performance I was giving at a museum I was working at. And the deadline was 7 a.m., but I knew Revenge of the Sith was coming out on DVD, and I I needed to get that done. But I stopped what I was doing. I drove to Target. I bought Revenge of the Sith, and I watched like half of it. And then I was like, okay, I got to save the rest until I finish this script. Anyway, point being, you know, he's got those lines of, I can't, I'm weak, I'm too weak, I can't hold on any longer. And like when I first heard that, it's like, I didn't have anybody at that point who wanted to talk with Star Wars about me, like, except for to be critical. Yeah. And I really had that like, man, I think that's about him letting go. He's letting the face come out. So it was one of those things I was excited to talk about for years and had no one to talk to about it.
Yeah.
So thanks, everyone. Thanks, Eric. That's a little bit of backstory for me and my relationship with Palpatine's melty face. But to get to my final answer, his face is clearly being hit by horrific, painful lightning, right? And there's some smoking and melting going on there, right? doubt about it.
I've told the story before, but I go back to seeing it at the Cinerama Dome in 2005 with the 2 9-year-old boys behind me bawling their eyes out during that scene, and the mom's trying to calm them down. I'm not laughing at the kids and their horror, but wow, that was a scene.
I just picture so many moments like that, because there's violence in Star Wars, right? Oh, yeah. Just George Lucas just suddenly appearing and going, it's for kids. And obviously the heart of it, the lessons are, but then you get that tension of the pulp adventure serial thrill. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, I mean, I think that it absolutely has something to do with the Sith lightning because of the smoking and melting that's going on. And it is directly into his face, and Mace is kind of pushing it back. But at the same time, nothing like that happens to Luke or Anakin, you know? Right. They don't go melty or any of the number of characters that we've seen get hit by Sith lightning. I remember reading the EU book, the Truce at Bakura, which I was really excited to read because it was right after Return of the Jedi and Luke talking about like how he needed his bones are kind of calcified and he needs to hydrate. I remember that being like, okay, that was not a temporary pain. That was ongoing.
Yeah.
Great EU stuff. So I think there is an element of it that is physical, the volume of damage. And watching it closely, I think that I can't hold it any longer, and I'm too weak, I can't hold on any longer, is a little bit of a feint that he can't keep defending himself from Mace's blade. But there's always struck me to me some level of honesty in that, which is what made me sit up when I was watching that DVD, even though I had a deadline. I think it is about, there is a price to the dark side. It rots you. It turns your eyes. Mm-hmm. So many dark side. Look at their teeth, right? Like, it isn't like I turned to the dark side and I gave up flossing, right? That's that's the powering, unnatural levels of hatred through your body constantly. Right. Has to have an effect. So I think a certain amount of the melting is real on the face. I think the eyes going yellow and the teeth rotting, I think that's just letting the pretense go and letting it all flow through him.
So, yeah, I love this because if you follow, you mentioned like, go to Revenge of the Sith when Anakin on Mustafar and he turns, he's got the yellow eyes. Like there's some kind of, it's a little magical, a little mystical. And I'm not suggesting that you're suggesting that Palpatine has like, like Melisandre in Game of Thrones and takes off the necklace and, she's been hiding. She's a 400-year-old crone or something like that. But something not unlike that could be what you're talking about here. And I can get behind that because of the Sith and dark side and how horrible the dark side is, right? And how we talk about the simple idea of light side builds, dark side destroys. Why wouldn't it also take out your spleen? Like, it's working, it's coursing through you. And you and I both celebrate the power, unlimited power moment. Absolutely has turned into one of my favorite moments in Star Wars, as well as this whole battle and this whole sequence, because it is him just going, no more. I don't have to pretend for nobody. This is who I am. So for it to follow, follow that line all the way to his face, I can get behind that.
Yeah, I think that's it for me is you can kind of break it down. But, I go to some of the way that one of my favorite creators, David Lynch, talks about reading film. It's like, we can come up with the clues and we can hear interviews from creators. But there's also just that, like, what does it feel like in your gut? Mm-hmm. And that's for me is like this whole sequence feels like ripping off the mask, ripping off the chains and just letting it all hang out. Like the way he screams unlimited power, like this is what he's wanted to, every fake manipulative conversation he's had with Mace Windu, this is what he's wanted to scream and do. And it's just all out there in the open. And that sigh of relief feels like not only did I just let it all out and finally kill that a-hole Mace Windu, but it's like, I can just be me. And then the yellow eyes and the rotted teeth, but there's also then the rest of the sequence, which is maybe one of the more disturbing sequences in Star Wars, those guttural animal noises he makes, like his voice is deeper and weirder, right? When he's just you will be a strong. Everything about this whole sequence feels like, I can just be myself and myself is evil.
Yeah, no, and about that, I mean, now we're just kind of looking at that full scene. It's a four-center mini scene-by-scene episode here. It's all, look, we're talking about 2005. I got the two kids screaming behind me at the Cinerama Dome in horror. There's a lot of things. And by the way, if you happen to be one of those kids in 2005, now you're in your early 20s, reach out. Let me know. If you were in the Cinerama Dome, it was a midday showing, I think on a Monday or something like that. Me and my roommate Joel went. I'd love to know your experience with Star Wars and your relationship to it now. But that's the guttural growls. It was all fodder for jokes. A lot of it was, lest we forget the prequel wars, as you mentioned so wonderfully in your stand up actor Joseph, the prequel wars that you survived. Unlimited power was a joke. How could they do that? It was so dumb. I heard that a lot. And the guttural growls were that too. And I think, again, I look at it so differently now, but I think it's an extension of what you're saying of just, It's almost like Palpatine putting on his Sith sweatpants. Bye-bye, belt. I'm not, no pretenses for nobody. This is who I am. And it feels good. And henceforth becomes this memorable line.
Darth Vader.
It's yeah. just because it's, and McDiarmid's not just doing that stuff by accident to me. And Lucas gave him a lot of, I think, room, but just push it more and more and more as McDiarmid has explained of almost it was like, is this too over the top, George? And George saying, no, more. Faster, more intense, but also more over the top. So it does track to Palpatine's big reveal and to Eric's question here. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So yeah, I think we're on the same page that there's definitely some old face mountain lightning damage, but there's something more going on as well.
Yeah, and again, I'll throw my idea of like Palpatine going, good. I didn't plan for my cheeks to melt, but. It feels right.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, maybe if his face didn't melt and he did just let himself go, he would have hunched a little and the eyes would have still went yellow. Like there's still I'm dropping the mask going on. All right. Thank you, Eric, for that wonderful trigger to some fascinating memories, as well as hopefully our opinions on your question. Move on to our next question from Jacob Hodge. Jacob says, how do you keep track of all the different storylines in your head when you're following comics, books, shows, and movies as they're coming out without getting confused and crossing your timelines? Ken, I'll just start with, I do get confused all the time.
Yeah.
And really make an effort, to pre-research or to double check when we're talking here, because it is easy to get confused. Where do you go with this? Do you get confused? And if so, how do you deal with the confusion?
Yeah, absolutely. My first part of this, my answer here, Jacob, is just take a breath. And we've talked a lot about Force Center here, you and I, not always caught up in the comics. I try to stay caught up, but I get behind. And since not all the comics hit with me, as I've said before, that doesn't mean I'm not trying to pay attention to what's going on and where it falls. So that, I want to be clear about that. But like even the other day, you and I and Jennifer discussed on the news episode here of the idea of Ahsoka meeting Luke, right? And what Dave Filoni's dreaming up. And even in researching my answer for that question, I kind of got confused of when is World Between Worlds? What's the last thing we see Ahsoka do? Mm-hmm. Until it, like Luke's timeline, a lot easier to follow. But then again, we got 5 years. And is that when he was out with Lor San Tekka? Is that even still, applicable to Luke's journey that he and Lor San Tekka went looking for things, as we've been led to believe by some of the visual dictionaries and stuff? So I do get confused, and I'll tell you, shout out to our good friends. We mention them so often because we love them dearly, but Alex and Molly put together so many wonderful videos, and Alex does the big canon timeline video every year. It gets larger and larger and larger. It's going to be like an 8-hour video at one point, and those help. And that's why those YouTube channels like that, but I always go to Star Wars Explained. I'm brand loyal to them. It really does help because it is a lot. And I've even seen some graphics going on lately on Twitter of here's all the timelines and here's all the projects in development and the different eras. And by the way, I love this. Just dump all the eras. Mm-hmm. I'll figure that out. But I think it's okay as a Star Wars fan. I don't even know if this is the spirit of your question, Jacob, but it's okay to admit, a little confused. And where does this go? And to pull back, take a breath, and God bless the fine folks who make Wikipedia a thing, because then you can go through and just kind of here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah, no, I mean, Wikipedia and Star Wars Explained are both such great resources. And I have refreshed myself on the Inquisitors about 1,000 times. I've read or played the video game or watched almost every story with the Inquisitors, but I still like, getting into the heart of Kenobi and going like, I know that, Fifth Brother goes on, but I can't remember each beat with him and things like that. So for me, they're always a good resource to refresh anytime you want. I think for me, I tend to remember the stuff that's close to my heart, you and I review. Certain things will stick with me. Even if I watched a story 3 times, really going through it suddenly, and really talking about the ideas behind it will kind of lock something into place a little bit more for me. So there's that. That's a tool. I think using movies as anchors for me when I get a little confused, or like, okay, wait a minute. Yeah. Which movie is it closest to? Because those are the things that I know absolutely best. Mm-hmm. So movies as anchors often helps me. The other thing that I would say, and I don't know if this is, I don't want to put this on Jacob because it might not be at all where he is coming from. Mm. I think that sometimes I can slip into the danger of gatekeeping myself. Mm. Of like, ooh, if I slip and I forget something, that someone's going to open a door and point and go, fake fan, you know, or, oh, I thought you were a trivia guy. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you can give into that fear, which is the silliest thing in the world. It's a lot of storytelling, and it's not a big thing at all to space on a detail or ask a friend a detail or look up a detail or just go like, I know this answer, but in this moment, I don't remember it. So I'm really trying to work on myself to not get hung up on like, ooh, that little moment of like, panic that I'm going to be fake fanned if I have a slip or don't immediately remember, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Look, especially when you're in a podcast or God forbid we're doing like a live YouTube show or a panel where you're caught on the fly. And I get the gatekeeping yourself. Cause there's some gotcha fans out there, you know,
especially on YouTube. Yeah.
Especially, you know, you and I competing in trivia contests or, you know, the folks who do the Dragon Con stuff, the trivia over there. Yeah, knowing that stuff can be equated to understanding Star Wars. And I don't think that's necessarily true. So, yeah, there's some times where you just feel you just have to let it go that, you know what, I don't know when this is.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a really fun interaction that related to this at Star Wars Celebration. We were at the meetup. And I think it was right. We had a meetup for Force Center. I think it was before you got there. And I was talking to a listener, a Star Wars fan, and a armorer in cosplayer and a Maul cosplayer were interacting and we started to have that like, oh, man, could they have a fight? And I had, you know, it was the third day of the convention. You know, it's hot. I'm tired. And I had that total like, could they? And I just said it out loud. I was like, I'm having one of those timeline moments. Could they? And like, oh, yeah. And then. It ignited all this storytelling. It was like, well, actually, of course, they could actually have a relationship,
right?
You know, because of Maul's involvement in Mandalore, because we don't know the armor or the Children of the Watch's entire backstory, because the armor has those little horns on her helmet that does make people curious if she has any affiliation or interest in Maul. So that was one of those moments where I had that moment of like, oh man, I'm spacing. And then what brought me back is getting excited about the story.
Yeah.
Not the facts, not the timeline, but the story.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And to those that value the every little detail in the timeline, we do too. And if that's the focus more than the story too, that's good. But I as I get older, and we all start forgetting more details as we get older. I don't know why I walked into the kitchen, and I don't know when the armor might have met Maul, but I'm happy to be in the kitchen in Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's a great question, Jacob. So, yeah, I think the basic answer is we use lots of resources, and sometimes we're sharper than other times, and it is fine to get confused from time to time. I guess maybe the other thing is if you're ever confused about Star Wars – and aren't sure of a fact, you can just imagine that you're cosplaying Din Djarin.
Yes.
And being utterly confused about who knew when, what, where, why. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more Questions of the Force.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And we are back with more Questions of the Force. We are going to our patrons on Patreon. We're going to Chris Kiefer. Chris says, Luke goes to Tatooine and Kenobi with potential to fight the Empire as a Jedi. Luke goes with Bail Organa with the potential to fight the Empire as a diplomat. Do you think Yoda and Obi-Wan made a hedge bet with the twins? It is a very fun question, and a particularly fun question now here in the throes of the television show Obi-Wan Kenobi. Where do you go with this, Ken?
Chris, my favorite librarian in LA County, with a question here that's fun on the surface, but then sent me into deep, deep ruminations on what they believe. So, yeah, I love this idea. Yes, they did make a bet at the beginning of all this before it got even, you know, I mean, it was always serious, but, you know, all right, I'll see you in 19 years or so. I don't know. We'll figure when this is out. Let's make a bet on this here. But I think that bet stretches all the way out until the Battle of Exegol. And they realize it was a push, and that both of them, it was equal. They both fought it in their own way, and it all, thanks to Rey, comes out okay. And then a ghost Obi-Wan, or maybe at this point he's just a voice, but Obi-Wan and Yoda, they just kind of put their money back in their pockets there. And the bet is a push. So I go there, and a fun question. But then, yeah, just analyzing why, and why there's so many things now with from a certain point of view, conversations in those books that are, you know, canon, Jason, however, again, they're getting hung up on details and the timelines, but it's the idea that Yoda going, nah, I don't know, should have been Leia, and Obi-Wan believing in Kenobi, and why? So clearly Kenobi is this little bit more of an emotional connection here, and we're watching that get explained more. We're going to see where he ends up and why he focuses, believes Luke's the chosen one after Anakin, all that kind of good stuff. And so it's just a little bit more personal, where I wonder if Yoda, as he's reflecting a little bit more by himself, and occasionally facing some problems, as we've seen in some stories, probots coming by or something like that, Yoda's just really learned about wars and them not making one great, and carrying out some of that stuff, the final Clone Wars stuff with him in season 6. He just kind of sees a long-term picture, and maybe thinking even beyond, and thinking what is needed to set up, maybe even just literally set up new governments, or leadership's got to remain in place. It's more than just about winning. It is about this concept of ruling. So it's not that he's thinking about specific plot points, but just thinking this being Leia and her journey might be the winning bet because it's more long term. I don't know. That's kind of where I started the conversation in my mind.
I like this a lot. I think for me, the scene is so short in Revenge of the Sith of when they actually make the decisions of where the twins are going to go, right? But the vibe that I get from that initial, like, I think they develop more opinions as the twins grow, right?
Yeah.
And we've got some great storytelling from Yoda wanting to train Leia that you're talking about. Who knows what else will develop in this great Obi-Wan Kenobi show. I kind of get the vibe that Obi-Wan is appreciating Leia and appreciating the path that she is on. And that might be part of why he believes in Luke, not only because of what Luke presents to Obi-Wan, but that he sees this path that Leia is on. And maybe Obi-Wan is making a bit of a hedge bet with himself.
yeah.
During the Obi-Wan Kenobi show, or as a result of it. But I feel like in the beginning, right, I don't think they're in a super tactical point of view, right? I think it really is like, you know, I go to Yoda's reaction to Bail when he gets away from Palpatine. Like, failed, I have, right? You know, into exile, I must go. I think when they say, you know, when the time is right, you know, we're gonna go away until the time is right. And I think their focus is, hey, look, the way the Force moves, the children of Anakin and Padme, two of them twins, destiny's coming for them one way or another, or eventually. And we're not putting any chips down right now. Mm. Our focus is entirely on they need to be kept separate and safe, because if they're together, they're more easily sensed. They have to be somewhere where, you know, they're going to be hidden in some way. And then after that, I think everything is about love when they're kids, you know, when the initial decisions are being made. Because if Yoda and Obi-Wan are both in this kind of place of shock of like, we failed, we got drawn into something, there isn't an energy of like, it's not like there's a scene where Yoda and Obi-Wan are like, maybe we should take them and hide out, you know, in this Jedi temple. And Bail has to push back and say, no. It feels like they're both in a place of like, we're not in any place to teach kids, you know? So I think it's all about love. I think when Bail says, you know, we've always talked of adopting a baby girl, it's like, well, we have to be separate and hidden. Mm-hmm. We'll worry about their future later. Right now, they just need to be loved. And that's clear that Bail and Brea are going to give that to Leia. And I think that's why Yoda suggests taking Luke to his family, as he says. Yeah. Just take him somewhere he's going to be loved, you know? And it's Kenobi who says, I'll watch over him, you know? And Kenobi's clearly like a little antsy to train him. Yeah. But I think it's about like, after all the horror and the trauma, they can't be snatched by Palpatine. They can't be snatched by, you know, Anakin. I guess they believe Anakin is dead at that point. But they just need to be somewhere safe and loved.
I love this. I love this love talk. I think that's really important. And again, going back to that scene, you're so right. It is that is. I think I even forget that little detail of Yoda going, okay, cool. Yeah. Okay, then you take him to the family. I'm a little bummed that I think Yoda had some more thoughts. He needs to go work out little ruminations over there in Dagobah. If I was Yoda, would have been like, hey, Bail, do you have an apartment over there, like a studio? I'm just looking for a studio apartment. I need to watch Leia over there. Instead, he goes to live in the bog. But and then it changing, and I think we're seeing that, and we're getting. This is why I think I love the Leia stuff so much, and you and I both. Watching the first episode together in a hotel room, Star Celebration Anaheim, when Bail's like, hey, she is just as important, guy. We both kind of stood up on our seats a little bit because we think that's real true, number one, and it's just important to hear and hear a character in Star Wars say. But it plays out, and I'm just wondering as this bet goes on, and I got to imagine they communicate over the years and go, you know, you want to change the bet. Maybe Kenobi at the end of that's the final season of this first six episodes of Kenobi, you know, because now we're hearing rumors of more. Maybe it ends with, Yoda and Kenobi communicating, and Kenobi's like, can I change my bet? I got space kid dreaming about flying, and I got clearly a Padme's daughter here. I joke, of course, there, but I like the idea that it changes. And the value of, after now that they know that Anakin's alive, or at least Kenobi's learning that, and if there's any clue to Anakin / Vader only really being aware of Luke, right? That being a surprise held off until Return of the Jedi for a lot of people, including Vader and Luke and the audience, that means, that's why some of Luke's journey and what Chris is even asking about, he's got to fight the Empire as a Jedi. Not that Leia couldn't be and wouldn't have value there, but that Vader's focusing on him. That's where Luke's got to deal with that. And Leia's the rebellion is on her shoulders, no small feat. And that's where that kind of narrative emerges as they learn more.
Yeah, I think so. I think if anybody is really placing bets, I think Bail and Brea's choice to say, we're going to hide Leia in plain sight. You know, we are not going to hide her light. We are going to, get her into a position to make a legitimate difference as a good and noble politician and leader. They're grooming her to take over Alderaan. They're grooming her to be in the Senate. You know, we know from the Leia Princess of Alderaan book that there's hopes that there can still be some sort of non-violent solution to what the Empire has become and into Palpatine's, you know, reign of terror. But they're really choosing to put her in that role and to keep her in that role and think that that role is just as important as whatever might happen in the future with Luke. So I think in some ways it's just Bail and Brea's choice of how they raise how they raise Leia that is putting a chip on the table, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I have a little, thought in my head of just, it isn't just as simple as, Padme's gone. We need to replace her, but Padme's gone. If she had been here and survived and all these, the change of the Republic to the Empire happened, like how important and valuable she would have been in that fight. And we've got the next best thing. In fact, maybe it is a better thing. Leia, who might even have a touch of the Force, you know? So I've always kind of loved living with that of like, yeah, this is why she's as important. Padme was important and she's off the playing board, which is a tragedy. In a lot of ways. And so we have a chance to keep that spirit going. And that's why their approach is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with that. And I really love what we're seeing in the Obi-Wan Kenobi show to see the similarity between Luke and Leia, that they are both, looking at the stars dreaming of knowing more and having adventure. They are not going to just stay where they are. Like neither of their parents would have. So I love the way it develops that, like, they're both staring at the stars. As Leia gets older, she accepts her responsibility. She has, you know, she has devotion. She has a serious mind. And I just still love that short story from from a certain point of view book of Yoda being like, oh, man, she has Jedi sensibilities. Ah, the most serious mind. And then Wormy over here getting tipsy, you know, at the local saloon. Not at the local saloon. I'm thinking of that deleted scene. At Tashi Station. Where Mark Hamill's, I think, kind of playing it like he maybe just downed one at Tashi Station when he's talking to Biggs. He's like, I want to get out there. Thought of Yoda looking at that going, oh boy, instead, this determined, committed politician. Yeah. That's the future.
Well, look, this is a very fun question that leads into deeper discussions, and we'd love to have both. We love to celebrate the silly, the poignant, and the weird. I'm with you on all of that, we love Luke. You love Luke so much. I love Luke, and I don't mean to make fun of, especially never making fun of the young actor being Luke. It is absolutely playing out this way of zoom, 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 and hi, I'm 10. I could probably run this planet. it just feeds into some of the thoughts we know that Yoda and Kenobi have battled over.
Yeah, and it is fun to joke about, but it is also just like it's a celebration of, like, you know, you can't judge things by the surface. When Luke, it's not the whole original trilogy. It's one of the spines of the original trilogy that Luke doesn't understand the nature of the fight, and it takes that for him to step up and do what Obi-Wan always believed he could and truly be a great Jedi. So it's fun to laugh about because it's going somewhere great.
Yeah, excellent point. Yeah, and when we meet Leia, she's there. She's got it. Luke's got that important journey. I think you're right. I just love that's the deleted scene from Rise of Skywalker. Force Ghost Kenobi, Force Ghost Yoda, and they just go shake hands. All right, it's a push. The bet is over.
They both turned out quite well, quite well. Yeah. And they both passed on what they have learned. All right, we're going to move to our final question from Ben Potter. Ben has some thoughts, some theories, and that leads into some great discussion points. So here we go. Hello there, Ken, Joseph, and Jennifer. My question today revolves around kyber crystals. In your live Q&A for the month of May, a listener submitted a question about the origins of Rey's yellow kyber crystal. I have some headcanon for the end of The Rise of Skywalker, and I'm curious of your take. At the end of the film, we see Rey explore the Lars homestead and then ignite her lightsaber, revealing a yellow blade. At first watch, I thought it was odd for her to just randomly ignite her blade for a moment with no immediate danger and only BB-8 being around. Referring back to all the online videos of Rey's lightsaber chamber during the initial ignition, it's pretty clear that a blue and green color can be seen for a short moment in the chamber head before the blade ignites as yellow. My headcanon has been that ignition was actually the saber's first ignition. In the new Disney era canon, kyber crystals naturally lack any color until they are chosen by a Jedi, to which they emit usually blue and green, or on occasion, white, yellow, or purple. This is why Rey suddenly ignites it on Tatooine and why it shows a blue and green tint in the chamber for a brief moment while it decides her yellow blade. At first, a first ignition at the Skywalker home carries symbolism with both Rey's Skywalker's identity and her lightsaber being born. To follow up, we've learned that in the new Disney era canon as well, dark side users corrupt the kyber crystal and bleed it to give it its crimson color. What are your thoughts on the symbolism behind a Jedi's color being controlled by the Force, whereas a dark side user controls the color themselves? Curious of your thoughts. Keep up the great content, and may the Force be with you. May the Force be with you, Ben. These are some great thoughts, some great headcanon, and some great questions. So let's get into it. Ken, I want to start with just this idea of that possibly being the first ignition of Rey's blade. There's been a lot of conversation about her igniting it, what it means, all that. Where do you go for that moment at the end of Rise of Skywalker? And then we'll get to the rest.
I didn't have time to go listen to all of our episodes from that era when the movie came out and the reviews and discussions or anything we've done before. So I apologize if I am repeating information or adding new information that I failed to discuss elsewhere. This is a great question because I've always gone with this idea that that is the first time. Everything based on how Daisy Ridley plays it. Yes, it's a fun moment it's a fan moment, right? Look, yellow saber, to answer your question. This is, yes. But I've always kind of viewed it. And again, someone could have some information that contradicts this, you know, comic or something, or maybe she has the blade on her hilt, the hilt on her belt, I should say, elsewhere. I don't know. So apologize again, going to that first question of, I don't know, timelines and some stuff. That's a lot, but I just, the way it's played, the way it's looked. And then, yeah, when everyone kind of like realized, oh, blue and green make yellow in this case here in this lightsaber, I've just always kind of thought that maybe she built it there, built it on the way there, and that this was that moment. Now, whether or not it's played as, oh, I'm going to discover what my color is, I don't know if I think that's the case, or I can follow that idea, but I don't know if that's happened. But I've always thought this is the moment. And you and I love the yellow. I know you, great point of the yellow being this, the idea of the Jedi Temple guards and a keeper of the Jedi flame, if you will, so to speak. So I go there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Defender of it. Yeah. So I go there first, and I I don't want to put my own bet down on that moment. but from my interpretation in my heart, I think that's the first moment.
Yeah. I would be fine if it's the first moment. I would enjoy that. I think for me, I know some fans have struggled with that moment, much the way that Ben discusses of, you know, why does she ignite it in that moment? Mm-hmm. And I appreciate all of Ben's headcanon and different opinions at all times. For me, that moment has always been about lightsabers as a symbol, mm-hmm. about Rey's journey. And I think the way I always enjoyed that moment works beautifully if it's her first ignition. Because to me, it's about she has come here for a ritual, you know, the way that there are Jedi trials, and at certain points of the Jedi era, those are, hey, we have an actual, you know, here's a bunch of tests that you can take. They're designed to test you. But then the Jedi are flexible. And like, if you encounter something out in the world, that's your trial. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is for her, like, she doesn't have anyone to cut off her Padawan braid, you know,
right,
and say the words. And I think for her, this is, she maybe feels like she's passed her Jedi trials in facing Palpatine, but in facing her own anger and connecting with the cosmic force, connecting with the Jedi of old, and learning that nothing is impossible the way her Master Leia taught her. But for me, this is about coming to peace with her relationship with the past of this, the healthy way that the sequel trilogy ends of she in the past has felt like she could only define herself by the past, or if she fully understands the past. And this is so the past. And this is so respectful of, I learned so much from Luke and Leia. They will always be a part of me, but I also must go forward with my own identity. And the past is something that you can draw strength and inspiration from, but you must continue forward. And for me, it's always felt like a ritual of, I go to this place, I respectfully bury their blades, and the completion of this ceremony, this informal ritual, because I don't have anyone else right now, is for me to look at my blade, which is inspired by theirs, but is made of my staff, made of my life, made of my history, and I ignite it as a symbol, not as a weapon, not as defense, not as a reaction to environment, but as a part of a ritual of processing. I've buried the past. I'm moving forward in this lightsaber as a symbol of who I am going to be moving forward. But obviously it has connection to my masters and my past.
She didn't kill the past. She built things from it. Yes.
She built things from it. And part of what I've always loved about it is that the yellow color is cool. But the fact that it is partially built out of her staff. It is really her owning her past and her life and saying, you know, what I've gone through matters. It is a part of who I am. This is not me just blindly following the path because people told me to. This is me making my own path. And to me, the lightsaber is a symbol of all that. And I think it's because I get, you know, I love lightsabers. I love the idea that absolutely they're weapons, but they're also symbols. Like in the High Republic, all the great storytelling where Starlight Beacon gets christened and all the Jedi ignite their blades and put them in the air, right? That's about a ritual. That's about symbolism. That's about the blades meaning something more than just being a weapon. And to me, that's what that moment is about in the film. And becomes even richer if I go along with Ben's great headcanon, that's the first time that she's like, I built this. I'm confident it works, but I'm going to wait until this moment of ritual to prove to myself that it ignites.
Yeah. Yeah. I might rewatch the scene again today. I love the way she plays it. And there's such joy in the scene for me. And again, yeah, I know not everyone's favorite ending, even if it's, I know some people who like the movie enough, but ending didn't hit. Totally fine. I get it. But I was moved by the way she played that. Just the joy. Ray sliding down the sand dune into the old place.
Yep. And looking at this place where Luke had, you know, a childhood, you know,
and appreciating it and imagining what it was like for him. And I love that ending. I always understand if people have different opinions, but all this stuff that I'm talking about with like the ritual of it in the past and then moving to the future. Like I felt that on the first viewing and got teary on the first viewing. And I love this idea that it could be the first ignition. I've seen the blue and the green color, and that's all fascinating, just great stuff to talk about as well. Yeah. Any other thoughts on that element of Ben's question before we move on to Ben's actual question?
Hey, no, go ahead.
Okay, so he is asking about this big idea of the Jedi becoming, you know, connecting with their kyber crystal igniting and being the color that is correct for that Jedi versus the Sith unnaturally forcing them to be red. What symbolism do you get from that?
First of all, I'm one of the people that just right from the beginning just love the introduction of the bleeding of the blade process for the Sith, which I still believe that was the E.K. Johnston Ahsoka book, right? Was that the first time?
I believe that was the first, and I think that followed up very quickly in the Vader comic.
Correct. Yes, which is a powerful example of it there, and Ahsoka kind of reversing the bleed, if you will, in that book, if I remember. Mm-hmm. So, I love that idea. I love it, and no, you know, disrespect to those who like the synthetic blade, synthetic crystal idea that Sith that we'd lived with before with Legends. That's not a bad idea either, by the way. That they can't get the real thing, so they build something of their own. I don't think this is any great insight for me, Joseph. Here, I just love the idea of this tracks with the Jedi letting go, letting the Force lead. And if that is Rey going, oh, it's yellow, great. I don't know. Mace Windu as a kid, oh, I got purple, yay. Like the gathering arc is beautiful. We love it for so many reasons around here. So I go with that idea that is truly the Jedi way. What called to you? What is it pulling out of you? Who are you? And that there is no the choices in the journey to get there. And from here, the Force is saying, hey, here's a light to lead you forward.
Yeah, I love that. It's not about control. It's about becoming, you know, in tune. It's about vibing with your kyber crystal, right?
It really is.
You know, I think it is. It's like it's a conversation, right? It's not, to me, it isn't the kyber crystal, like totally saying, hey, this is who you are. It is about being attuned, right? And if the Kyber crystal, you know, calls out to the Jedi that there's this possibility of being attuned, and that this is the one right color that emerges in between this union of the Jedi and the crystal. I absolutely love that idea. It makes the Kyber crystals very spiritual. I like everything that's been developed with them being much more attuned with the Force and all that stuff. Is absolutely great for me. And then on the flip side, it makes perfect sense if, like, Jedi are basically like, we're going to search out Kyber crystals, but we're not just taking them. We're only taking the ones that call out to us.
Yeah.
So we can be in some kind of harmony with them. If the Sith are like, no, we will take them. We will not have any release of control. We will force them to be the way we want them to be. That is, that's light and dark. Right. Yeah. And I like the idea of that the Kyber crystals are, you know, in tune with the Force, and they are in balance, that they want balance. And it goes to me of, you know, you can hear the interviews of Lucas saying this. It's the way I approach Star Wars and the Force, the idea that the existence of pain and suffering and death and anger, all these things of the dark side are natural. And you have to accept that they are going to happen. And when the Force gets out of balance is when somebody takes all those ideas like a Palpatine and says, I want to, I want there to be more pain, suffering, anger, death. I want that. I want to accelerate the dark side beyond its natural balance. And then the Jedi come in and try to keep it in balance. So if you, if you're thinking, if the Kyber crystals are like, that's good, we want that balance. For me, it's kind of fascinating to have like a Vader come along and say, I'm going to make this Kyber crystal be what I want it to be. Well, why does the Kyber crystal not want to be that? Right? Why does it not want to serve a Sith? Why does it not want to be bled of balance and of at least, you know, love and peace and you know, all these wonderful things? It's, to me, it's because the point of a Sith blade is to be a weapon of acceleration. It is to inflict pain. It is to, you know, seize control. You know, it is totally the opposite purpose of the Jedi.
Yeah, absolutely, truly a weapon of terror, a weapon of oppression, and a weapon that is wielded by someone just racked with fear. So much that, you know, they want a red lightsaber. They're going to do everything in their power to control it because they don't want to even let that go.
Yep.
And red, look, red's a cool color. Red and black, cool color scheme. I get it. This is why these characters become so popular. I understand it. I wear a lot of black. You do too, Joseph. You know, it's a little bit more meaning in Star Wars, and I'm with you on all that stuff there too. And that, for those who have not had a chance to read that, it was Charles Soule, right? Who did the first Vader run? Yeah, that or whatever that 25 issue Vader run is. Totally read it. Him bleeding the blade. It's a memorable moment for sure. And maybe if you're not on board for that yet, maybe, I'm not saying it will change your mind, but it's definitely a great interpretation of what it could mean.
It's a really great sequence that does just totally tell that story of like the Kyber crystal, like being like, are you sure you want to do this? This isn't who you are, and fighting back, and Vader wanting to dominate the crystal and make it do something it doesn't want to do. That is, you know, that sequence is a great answer to Ben's wonderful question about the symbolism.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any final Kyber crystal thoughts?
You know, we haven't answered the one, and I don't even think Ben's asking it. You know, where did Rey get her Kyber crystals? Guess what? We'll have a 2-hour episode one day to figure that out, too.
Yeah, I can't wait to see that story and see if it involves Hondo.
Well, look, we have the beautiful gathering arc. We have Professor Wang and just the story of that, and then things change. So I look at it, it's kind of like you got a Chili's restaurant, and then the airport, you got Chili's too. We're in the era of Chili's too for getting your Kyber crystal. We can't go to the big Ilum gathering arc. We have to do it in another way. It's Chili's too, and that's the story.
Yeah, I really like the idea that, and this is my headcanon. Ben's got a lot of great headcanon. I really like the idea, like, they have that big party at the end of Rise of Skywalker. It goes late.
Yeah.
And then there's maybe some discussion about some follow-up to the big victory. I'm sure there's some First Order stragglers out there. You know, maybe the galaxy could use a government of some kind. And I think in that, Rey's like, I got a journey to go on. Is a cool if I take BB-8 and the Falcon and bounce? And I don't think she just flies straight to Tatooine. I think she visits many places. I think it's a journey, and I would love that story, and if her Kyber crystal comes to her on that journey.
I would love it.
Excellent. Great question. And headcanon, thanks, Ben. Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Jacob. And thanks, Eric. And thank you all who send in questions. Ken, where can people find us?
Hey, we are Force Center Podcast. We can be found on Twitter at Force Center Pod. And use hashtag Force Center if you want to join the conversation or, you know, share your own visions of the final scene there. What do you think Ray was thinking in those moments? I don't know. Let us know. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We're available on a lot of spots, including Acast, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts. Hey, if you're on any spot that has a chance to give a review or a rating, we'd love that. Helps the show grow. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. Patreon.com/ForceCenter is where you can go support us. And from there, you get into our wonderful, warm, welcoming Discord server where you can discuss Star Wars 7 days a week with Force Center friends. You can find me at KatNapsok across all social media platforms and go to my website, KatNapsok.com. Don't forget, if you're a fan of music, we have a lot of Force Center friends that actually pop over to my music show on Mixcloud called Pop Rock and Radio. I had to take a couple weeks off because there was a little thing called Star Wars Celebration and Schmodown tapes and everything, but we'll be back with some great music soon. I do live shows and tape shows as well. Joseph, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can visit my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for lots of other comedy adventures, past, present, and future. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Palpatine's melty face, this has been Questions of the Force.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.